Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
It's happening. It's the Gravity Commons Podcast. Listener, you're with us again. It's Ben Sternke. I'm here with Matt Tebbe. Christy Penley is not here with us today, sadly. Moment of silence for Christy Penley's absence.
She's doing something important.
She is.
And we're just podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Two white guys podcasting.
Yeah, we're saving the world here, Ben.
That's the collective. Have you heard that joke? I've probably said this before, but the joke is, what do you call a group? You know how collective nouns, you know, like a group of crows is called a murder. Mm-hmm. What's a group of white guys? A podcast. So
we've got a podcast.
Look at that podcast of white guys going by. Anyway, we do have a podcast. We've got an interview for you today. Matt, you just got back from a retreat, though. You were in the mountains of Idaho, Montana? What was it?
Well, you're close. Wyoming. I was in Wyoming. Hyattville.
Wyoming. One of those states out there.
Hyattville,
Wyoming. The west of the Mississippi.
Yeah.
Any highlights? Anything you want to draw our attention to?
You know, I went fly fishing. I sat around a table and shared my burdens with a bunch of guys from all over the world, really. I sat by a river and you know, hashed some things out with God.
Okay.
It was good.
That's a good spot to, that's a well-worn biblical place to do things with God is rivers.
The river is one. Yeah. I was in the mountains too, hiked up and sat on a cliff and looked out over a valley, and it was gorgeous. It was awesome. With hanging out with Christy's husband, Paul, who helps to put on the trip and invited me to go. And it was really great. Just met a bunch of great people. The travel to and from on each end, though, I'm really feeling 50, man. My age. And I'm just kind of in a, I got brain fog. I got like this fatigue to travel back.
Yeah. And you're like a couple of days out from the travel back, and it's still, we just become more fragile as travelers.
Ben,
middle-aged, don't we?
I know that, I've referred to your condition frequently here on this podcast, but I'm wondering if a man in my condition needs to revamp his travel to and from retreats like this.
Yeah. Just, you know, it's worth, you know, getting up at a decent hour. Don't take the early flight.
Oh man.
It can be worth some of those things. Yeah. The cost of the flight used to be the number one factor. I was like, I don't care how early I have to get up, cost of the flight. But now it's not the only factor for sure. And it's not even, I mean, it's, you know, you have to be able to afford the flight, but, I'm not interested in getting up at 3 a.m. to catch a flight.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Well, I got up at 3 to go out there, and then I got home on the way back at 2 a.m.
Yeah. You're all jacked up still.
You know, my and sleep and me aren't really on speaking terms right now anyway. So it's been a challenge to get back in the swing of things, but it is nice to go on retreat and know that, you know, you're there holding down the fort, keeping house.
Thank you. I'm happy to do so.
It's nice.
Happy to do so, knowing that I also will have time to go on retreat. I'll do that later this year.
Yeah. Where are you going? Do you know?
Our denomination has a conference, kind of a holistic wellness conference. So they talk about all kinds of, they help you develop like a rule of life. It's called a Credo conference. Anyway, so I'm going to attend one of those in September in Oklahoma. There's a retreat center there, Episcopal Retreat Center. And yeah, we know somebody who's went to, who's gone to one of those conferences and said it was a helpful time away. And yeah, that's mostly what I'm looking forward to, is just time away to reflect. There's something about getting out of your normal geographic space and your normal rhythms. I think that prompts, it's helpful to travel. It's helpful to do, if you're able to do it, to kind of get out of your normal rhythms.
Yeah.
Even if just for a few days, just to, yeah, hash some things out with God if you need to.
Which I needed to, you know.
Or develop a rule of life, or, you know, hash some things out with your sleep schedule. Maybe that's the next retreat for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that retreats can feel luxurious, frivolous, you know, out of reach. And so it's not lost on me that, you know, listener, maybe you feel like, I'd like a retreat.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. There should be. If I had like $1 billion, I would fund retreats for people.
Fund retreats. You can go on this retreat. I mean, yes, that is. I mean, one of the reasons I'm able to go on this retreat in September is that our denomination sponsors it. I don't have to pay for a thing. That's really nice.
Yeah.
So that's really great to have. And we've there are. I will say, listener, there are monasteries that offer like just time and space retreat. They're not going to bother you. They're not going to put you through any kind of a program. You're welcome to join the monks for prayer, but you can just stay in the room if you want. There are places around that, you know, it's like suggested donation of $30 a night. And so retreats like that, you know, you can spend a couple nights at a monastery and get a lot out of that for $60 maybe plus travel. You can eat with the monks. Anyway, there's a monastery I visited a couple times up in Three Rivers, Michigan, that I've been thinking about going back to at some point. So Benedictine Monastery. What's it called? I think it's called the Abbey of St. Gregory.
Hmm.
So if you live around Three Rivers, Michigan, you can go check it out.
Hmm.
It's out in the middle of nowhere. It's just Benedictine monks hanging out, doing their thing, praying, working.
Yeah.
And then hosting retreatants.
And if you don't have time for retreat, maybe this book that Deb Gregory wrote.
Oh, great segue!
Could be a surrogate, you know, a substitute.
Tell us about this book and tell us about who's Deb Gregory. Wow.
Well, thanks for asking, Ben. She's a spiritual director with a specialization in Ignatian spirituality, an award-winning documentary filmmaker, and the host of the Betwixt podcast. Her holistic approach to Christian formation bridges ancient wisdom and modern neuroscience. Drawing from her experience in a neurodiverse family, she champions inclusive spirituality and supports those navigating a neurotypical world. Deb enjoys leading retreats, training spiritual directors, and exploring nature in Central Florida, where she lives with her husband and two daughters. Today, we talk to Deb about her new book, Spiritual Wayfinding: 33 Walking Meditations for Navigating Life with Embodied Wisdom. Let's get into it with Deb. Deb Gregory, welcome to the Gravity Commons podcast.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks.
We've known each other for a decade or so, it seems.
Maybe so.
Has it been that long?
Yeah. It is crazy.
Wait, how old are we? What the
heck?
We look exactly the same.
We do. Yeah. We all do. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listener, you'll have to believe us.
It's been a while since we've chatted, though, Deb. And so I wonder if you could, by way of introduction, maybe a little bit, give us... help us understand how you became interested in something as beautiful as walking meditations.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I became interested in it because I broke my ankle. So that's how it all began. Wow. Like many of us, I did a lot of walking, especially during COVID. Right? So many of us rediscovered walking during COVID. But I really didn't think much about it until I broke my ankle. And I just had so many questions about what was happening in my body because I was accustomed to my daily walks. I was accustomed to movement. And when that changed, I had a lot of awareness that things within me were changing. The way I was interacting with my own body, with my emotions, all of that was changing. So it just led into this this journey of discovery.
Yeah. It's interesting how it takes the negation of something sometimes for us to be curious about it and appreciate it. I've been dealing with plantar fasciitis now for a year. Ooh. And I'm walking still, but it's painful, you know? And I never appreciated pain-free walking until I had painful walking.
Right. Yeah.
Well, this book has a word in the title that I would love to hear you explore with us, and that's the word wayfinding. It's not a term that's commonly used, but it is important, I think, to your work. Can you unpack that a bit for us?
Yeah. So I use the term wayfinding. There's like a whole science of wayfinding today about signs and, you know, how to navigate urban spaces. But I was really interested in ancient wayfinding. Like, how did humans navigate vast distances without the technology that we use today? So I stumbled on all kinds of really interesting information about the way that we were wired before technology to really pay attention to the world around us. And I think we've lost so much of that. One of the things that I was really curious about was this device called an astrolabe. This is really nerdy stuff. But so before the astrolabe, people just relied on their hands in relationship to the stars and the sun and the moon, the horizon. So they were very much attuned to a world bigger than them. They found their place within the world that was very vast. But with the astrolabe, it became a device that you could hold in your hand, and it placed the user at the center. And that became the precursor to our smartphones, right? Mm-hmm. So now we live in a world in which we navigate from ourselves at the central position. We're the center of the universe. And so we've lost a lot of that ability to look around to find ourselves in a world that's bigger and more beautiful than just what we see around us.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Because, yeah, Google Maps, you're always right in the middle of the Google map. You know what I mean? You're right in the middle of the map, and everything around you is oriented to where you need to go next rather than just the vastness of the space.
Yeah.
At least when you're getting directions. So, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Just returned from a retreat, and it was way out in the middle of the Wyoming wilderness. And on one of the lodges that people were staying in, there is a roof patio on the lodge. It's kind of up the mountain a bit on the roof. And just laying on top of that roof at night, with light pollution very low because we're in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how much different my body feels.
Yeah.
When I'm in touch with the magnanimity of the sky and the massiveness of the stars. And it was interesting, like, it's unusual that I feel that small and that expansive.
Yes.
All at once.
Yeah. Did you feel connected?
Yeah.
In a very in the vastness, right?
Yes. And so that's one of the paradoxes, I think, that, I don't know, communing with God brings us, is that it relocates us or resituates us as creatures, as dependent creatures, as taking a place that's smaller than maybe our the ways our world disciples us into just inhabiting, as you were mentioning, like the center of the universe, Ben. But then that smallness is an expansiveness, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it helps relieve some of the tension that we feel when we find ourselves at the center of our own world or of our own universe. It's a lot of pressure to hold everything together when we're the center of it. Mm-hmm. But when we find ourselves to be part of something that's so much bigger and more expansive and purposeful on some level, even though we have no idea what that might even be, I think it relieves a lot of the pressure that we feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's something to that. I'm going to resist the urge to continue to riff on that, on that thought. Because I think I would like to continue to talk about a couple other things in your book. One of the things, I mean, it's a book of walking meditations, right? 33 walking meditations. Mm-hmm. And right in the introduction of your book, you mention how walking might be a helpful meditation activity for people who are neurodivergent. And I wonder if you could maybe speak on that for a bit. I mean, and the reason I'm curious about it is that I do talk with, you know, people in my church, other people who, when they talk about sort of maybe traditional meditation practices that, you know, you've heard about, like silence and solitude, for example, a lot of neurodivergent people tell me that it's hard for them to sit in their room alone without, you know, just getting antsy, or, you know, it's not a very effective way for them to connect with God, and walking can be helpful. I wonder if you can speak a bit about that. Why do you think that is, and how can that be helpful for people?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I don't think it's just neurodivergent people, but I think a lot of neurodivergent people help us tap into a wisdom that's already there, that our bodies are wired for movement, especially bilateral movement. The way that stimulates both hemispheres of the brain just does a ton of stuff physiologically. And I think that's the way we're wired. But, you know, as I'm a spiritual director, so I've been trained in the way of learning the contemplative life through silence, stillness, and solitude. And but I'm part of a neurodivergent family, and my daughter in particular, she resonates with some of that, but she also has a lot of questions about her body. Her sensory experience has become a really big deal. It's been something that's helped her spiritual life flourish and blossom, but it's also created a lot of barriers for her, especially in certain kinds of spiritual spaces that are, you know, there's a lot of sensory overload. So really I began walking with her when she was in middle school at the time, and having, I'm allowed to say she's neurodivergent. I'll just say this up front. She's given me permission to talk about that, and she's, but she wants to keep it minimal what I say, but I am allowed to talk about her sensory processing because she has what's classified as a severe sensory processing disorder. And that means that, some people, are sensory seeking. They need a lot of stimuli to get regulated, and others are sensory avoidant. And so she's sensory avoidant, and it caused so many physical and emotional issues that arose from being unregulated in spaces that were taxing her body. And so during these walks with her, we really began to explore our bodies. And we talk about embodied spirituality, but we keep it so vague. We just throw it out there. Embodied spirituality is a good thing. But because of her sensory processing differences, we really dove in to look at every one of our sensory systems and our emotional systems that are tied in very intricately to our sensory systems. And then all of that plays into how we think. So that's kind of the way the book unfolded. And it really was through paying attention to and centering the spiritual and physical experiences of neurodivergence.
Mm. Listener, as you may know, we are an entirely listener and participant supported podcast and organization. We decided to stop taking ad money a little while back. So part of what you might be interested in is how you can support us, how you can be involved in more of what we do. We're not just a podcast, but we have a community, an online community called the Gravity Community. And there's all kinds of good stuff that happens there.
Yeah, if you want to go from just listening to a podcast to actually participating in a community, you can join the book club, you can join classes that we offer. In fact, right now you guys are teaching stuff. And so how do they do that? How do they sign up? How do they get involved, Matt?
Yeah, you go to gravitycommons.com/reconstructing. Is that right, Ben? Did I do that right? No. gravitycommons.com/community. Ben knows the address better than I
community.
Do. No, it's community. But also reconstructing can get you there too. But yeah, we're doing a Sermon on the Mount class right now that Ben and I are taking turn teaching. Probably tag teaming is a better way to say that. And it's a lot of fun because I think we're dealing with how do we follow Jesus from, you know, the center and the ground of love, and how do we listen to Jesus's like teaching on the law, primarily centered on love. So that class will go through the next few weeks, and then we'll do another one. And if you join, you get access to all past classes and all past book clubs.
Yep. Yeah, we record each of these and we post them in there, and they're just freely available to anybody who joins the community. And part of the reason that we can offer that for free is that some people who are able to do so can they purchase a supporting membership, which is $25 a month in the community. And there's other ways to be involved and other ways to give. Sometimes when we offer a new class, people will kind of give a donation for that class, for their participation in that class or in that book club. But to get all the goodness and to see what all is involved, go to gravitycommons.com/community. Again, it's free to join, and you can just check things out there and get involved as you like.
You know, I'm neurodivergent and recently have developed a lot of like audible or sound sensitivity that dysregulates my nervous system. And it's been disorienting to me because typically I need lots of stimulus to pay attention. You know, I am constantly seeking things to bring my awareness up to like, oh yeah, I can be calm and pay attention and sit still and, you know, remember and track. And now there's this weird calibration that I do still need stimulation in order to pay attention, which is why walking has always been home base for me in prayer. It's like just enough body movement to keep my attention where I want it to be. But now I also need to pay attention to, like you said, dysregulated overstimulation. Orally. And it's like, you know, it's a full-time job.
Yeah, it is.
Taking care of myself.
Yeah.
You focus on sensations. Like the first three sections are about body sensations, emotions, and thoughts, and becoming acquainted with these. What is the significance of tuning in to our faculties as humans that what have you learned as a spiritual director, as doing these walking meditations? Why is it important to pay attention to these things?
Yeah. You know, it's very simple and it surprised me. So I work a lot with discernment, right? But so many people, and I've been trained, you know, to deal with discernment as something that's cognitive, that's something that's full of my thoughts, making a wise choice.
Right.
But at the root of it, discernment begins in our body. It begins in our sensory systems. Like, it's so much faster than our thoughts, and it's so much more immediate. And our decisions always happen first in our sensory system, way before they even become formulated in thoughts. So our sensory system is always working for us to help us know where we are, what we're doing. Is this good? Is this healthy? Is this hot? Is it is it dangerous? Right? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, so that was kind of an epiphany for me because I never really paid attention to the discernment that was happening just already in my body with my sensory system. And then through walks with my daughter and her insights, because for her, she's so much more in tune with her sensory system than I am. And so she opened up so much wisdom for me. Just learning, like, what is it that my body's doing for me right now? And how do I pay better attention to it? And I think it really can help us in this work of discernment.
Yeah. That's something I'm grappling with. I don't know, grappling with is the right word, but something that I'm learning as well is similar to that. That discernment is a knowing that you can't necessarily defend on rational grounds. You know what I mean? Like I'm accustomed to needing a reason for having known something or knowing something. But like learning to honor my own intuition as like legitimate, has been a real, it's been an interesting journey just to say like, I don't know why I feel this way, but I just feel like I know this is right.
How do you know that, Ben? Like if you would dig into that, is it like an emotion, or is there something more that's happening?
Yeah. I feel like this is like free spiritual direction here.
Yeah.
This is great. Spiritual director's going to direct, huh? So, that's such a great question because I still feel like I'm learning what that all of that means.
Yeah,
Deb. It feels like it's a place beyond emotion to me. There's something beyond emotion or thought or a well-reasoned argument. And I don't know how else to describe it, but it's definitely in my body somewhere.
Yeah.
There's like some sort of, it almost feels like a weight kicks into place. Like something just like lodges, like, and it just is like, yes. This is right. This is true. This is good. And I don't know that it feels like it's an embodied thing, but it's also a transcendent kind of a spiritual thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
You know,
Well,
I've always, back in the ancient days when I studied at university, I did a lot with the Hebrew Bible. Mm-hmm. And I was really fascinated at that time of like, I think I just got this idea that animation, the human being's animation, is really at the heart of spirituality. The animated body, you know, like that's what God did when he breathed life into us, right? So there's something about being an animated person and paying attention to what animates us that I think is really at the core of what it means to be a spiritual person, right? And paying attention to those things that animate us with the spirit or the good is beautiful work.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that question. Got me thinking. I wondered, you know, we talk about neurodivergence and how physical activity and walking in particular can be helpful for neurodivergent people. But of course, you know, Matt talked about plantar fasciitis. Other people have disabilities that prevent them from being able to walk freely or comfortably. Maybe they don't live in a spot where that's, you know, available to them, or their bodies limit them in some ways. I wonder what kind of counsel you can give to those who might not have an easy time walking. Like, how do they participate in prayer and meditation? I don't know, like, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I do. I think part of that comes from beginning to write this book when I couldn't walk. And at that time, I was also beginning a program for disability advocacy. So that's part of the work that I do. And so that was a question that I had throughout. And, you know, one thing I've learned from, especially from my friends who have various mobility disabilities, is that we all love to go out for walks. You know, the mm-hmm. however we do that will look different depending on, you know, what season of life we are, where we live, what kind of access and accessibility we have available to us. But I think that there's, you know, for me, it's much more than just going for a walk. There's something about the motion, the optic flow, that sense of the world passing by you as you're moving forward. So sometimes that can happen in a car. I love trains, right? You get this long experience of optic flow just sitting there peacefully as the world just continues to go by you. Bikes. So there's lots of different ways we can experience that. And as I mentioned before, anything that's bilateral is helpful. So it could be butterfly taps. It could even just be listening to binaural beats. You can, like, there's tons of these on YouTube, especially for those of us who have insomnia. But, you know, there's this, the way that the sound goes from one ear to the other ear back and forth. All of these bilateral movements are really beautiful ways for us to kind of deepen our regulation and our embodied sensitivities.
Yeah. Well, the book is just 33 walking meditations that, and each chapter is several pages, and they all follow kind of a pattern where you give a brief reflection, and then you have a scripture, you have some questions, and then you have a certain kind of walking or a certain location or a certain intent. And I thought it might be helpful for us if you could share one of them. Maybe we could just take one to maybe dig into a little more to give an idea or a picture of the kind of flavor that you're tasting in this book. So, Deb, do you have one that you could share with us? Maybe a favorite one or one that was meaningful to you?
Sure. I'll just do the one of the very first ones from the sensory section, if that's okay. Do you want me to read the whole chapter or just a portion of it?
Yeah, maybe give us a summary of what the reflection's about. And then if you could walk us through the actual exercise, I think that would be helpful. Yeah. That's the thing that I think is really significant about your work.
That's great. So this is walk number 3. Horizon gazing walk. So this is based on a lot of work by Francine Shapiro, and she's the person who developed EMDR, which is a very common therapeutic approach for trauma. But it began, and I'll just read like the sentence here. Haunted by disturbing thoughts, Francine Shapiro decided to take a walk. And she noticed that as her eyes moved back and forth, her body calmed and the troubling thoughts faded. Curious about the connection between lateral eye movements and stress reduction, Shapiro investigated this phenomenon for her PhD. And then this is how she developed this technique. So it really began for her as going for a walk. And with this, I became really curious about the movements of the eyes, especially in motion. I talked about the optic flow. And so so this chapter kind of talks a little bit about the science and the neuroscience behind eye movements and our regulation and our bodies. But then it turns towards the spiritual with just this reflection on ancient pilgrimage, especially the Jewish pilgrimage three times a year to Jerusalem. And if you're familiar with some of the songs of ascent, you might remember that one verse, I raise my eyes toward the mountains. Where will my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. God won't let your foot slip. And so this walk really invites some reflection on eye movements, both the habits of our eyes, where do we put our eyes throughout the day, and also an invitation just to lift our gaze and to reflect on our hope, essentially.
Yeah.
And I think walking is one of the best practices of hope, because we're looking forward to something that we're not at yet, and it's difficult ground. We're not even sure where we're going most of the time. But even if we don't feel hope, when we walk, we're enacting hope. And so this verse meditation is just kind of a practice of hope, by reflecting on that psalm of ascent and lifting our gaze upward to the horizon along the way.
Yeah. You know, what struck me about this meditation, and I think this is true of most, if not all, the meditations, is that you take something as banal as looking, something we can't not do, for those of us who have sight, right? Mm-hmm. And you invigorate it with worship. So really, it's using your vision as an intentional vehicle for worship and connection and communing with God, and ascribing to it like intent, like looking intentionally rather than looking absent-mindedly. You know, mm-hmm. most of us spend most of the time looking like we breathe. You know, it's just something that we're doing.
Yeah.
And it really is reclaiming these ordinary practices, like walking and looking and many others throughout this book, and situating them squarely in God's presence, that it really does open up our ordinary everyday lives to the beauty and grandeur of the divine.
Yeah.
So these practices are almost like taking back parts of our life that seem to be too common to be spiritual, and situating them in God's presence, which is where they always are.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That's a great way to say that, Matt. Yeah. And that's my hope, is really just to, I don't know, pull back the curtain a little bit to the things that we're already doing. Mm-hmm. And just, as you said, just gain some intentionality and just to become curious. What am I doing here? What is captivating my eyes? Where do my eyes go most of the day?
Yeah.
What is that forming in me?
Yeah. You know,
it's a very simple question, but it's so profound once we start paying attention to these simple movements that we're already doing.
Right. Well, and just as somebody, I mean, I mentioned this earlier, but I've spent most of my prayer time, personal prayer time, the last decade or more, walking. And your book gives me so many creative ideas of how to invigorate walks with different intents, right? Different offerings of my body and ways of being with God. So it's a, I don't know, it was a wonderful help for me. You sent me a book during my sabbatical and put a nice little note in here. And I just, I'm thankful for it and the gift it has been for me. And I'm thankful for you, Deb. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's my joy. Thank you both.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith, spirituality, and whatever else comes up. Also, Ben and I hang out there a lot. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. And we'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.